Hi, folks. Welcome to The Creative Nomad, presented by TrueAwesomeLife.com. I'm your host, JP Adkins, and I created this podcast because I want to tell the stories of the radicals, the ones who are out there making the world a better, more beautiful place, the amazing authors, artists, musicians, thought leaders, coaches, and yes, nomads who are out there living their true awesome lives and want to help others do the same. Are you ready to live your true awesome life? Go to TrueAwesomeLife.com and start your journey today.
Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to The Creative Nomad. I am so absolutely happy and lovely to be here with April. Now, not only is she pretty local to me, April Gaines is a professional mental health and substance abuse counselor. She's a certified advanced alcohol and addictions counselor through MBAPA Michigan. And April has gained a total of 18 different degrees and certificates in mental health, substance abuse, healing, and spirituality domains. And a few of these include being a 2 times over Reiki energy healing master, an Amadeus energy healer, a certified hypnotherapist, and an Oracle acupuncturist. So, you know, she's super experienced. She's been doing this for a while, and I'm so honored to have her on the show today. And April, I mean, that's what you do, but who are you at your core?
Who am I at my core? I am a mom. That's my core. My core is a mom. I am a mom to 5 girls, and I had to also take on my niece for a period of her life. And then my kids had their kids, except for my 2 youngest, and they would move in with their kids. So then I was mom again, and I would adopt like stray children. My kids' friends, I'm a mom. That's who I'm just a mom. And I say that, you know, my older children will say, oh, you're amazing, you're this, you're blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, nope, I'm just a mom. That's just a mom.
Oh, my goodness, just a mom. Moms are such superhuman people.
And that's what my kids think. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's all the, and I've seen this from the moment that I've seen you. Like, really, it's like the energy radiates off you in such a great way. So thank you for being who you are.
Interesting that you say that, because like it's not so much now. Michigan, we're still dealing with the pandemic and the COVID and being locked down, but in my office at my job, people would say that clients would come in to me and they would say, you're so calming. And I'm thinking, I'm just sitting here, you know, but they would say the same thing.
Yeah, because I think it's important as healers in general, and from the energy I get from you, it is such a, I'm here, I'm a space, I'm open, and it's just a loving space. You're not trying to push anything. You're not trying to, you know, I know this is just like weird, but what's coming to me is you're not here to fix anything. You're just here to be and to help and to love. Mm-hmm. And I've totally felt that, like, literally, as soon as we popped on, I'm like, oh. And I wasn't in the most loving mood. So it was a great, like, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
Great reminder to me. Thank you.
Yeah, we're both wanting to go back to bed today, right?
It's
one of Michigan. Those days here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's getting ready to rain again. And I have, you know, I'm in the RV, so it's when it rains, it's like this lovely sound on like the whole tin roof idea. And it's like, yeah, let's just go back to bed and forget today exists, and I can watch TV.
Right.
And there'd be nothing wrong here. Except there would be a lot of wrong here. I have some things to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I having you on is such an honor to me personally. It's very personal, because I don't know how much I've talked about this on the show, but my ex was the reason why we end up not being together at one point is finally after 7 years is his drug addiction. And in Michigan, and I know across the country, I know that it's such an epidemic, and it was because of pain pills, and it turned into heroin, and it's the classic opioid story. And I kind of wanted to hear your take on that, like being on the other side, because here in Michigan, it took us almost 3 months to get him into a rehab facility. It was extremely difficult to do. It was extremely, and he ended up only staying for less than a week. So I would really like to hear your take on what's happening.
Well, the opiate crisis is a crisis, and that is a, I almost think it's a global crisis. And I have several clients that I can tell you that they would have never, ever, ever, ever had an addiction if it wasn't for the doctors writing those scripts. I still to this day have people that, as a counselor, what I do, I can't speak for every counselor because as you can imagine, I've been told, that, how do I put this? They've just quite out said, I've never had a counselor like you. Right. So there are areas of functioning for a person. And every single time I talk to you, I'm assessing those areas. So I'm looking at your addiction. I'm looking at your mental health. I'm looking at your social life. I'm looking at your relationships, your job. I'm looking at all of these areas, and there's a couple more, all at the same time as I'm talking to you, and I'm seeing where you're at, and I'm seeing where I need to help you is what I'm doing. And I have people to this day that they are fine in every single area except for they're still addicted to opiates, right? We have them either on methadone, or we have them on Subutex, or we have them on Suboxone. My favorite one, though, is Vivitrol. And the reason is because if you don't know about Vivitrol, what that is it is an actual shot that you can get once a month for up to 2 years. And it goes in and it mimics opiates, and it makes your body think that it has its drug, but it doesn't. It has no opiates in it. The people are finally sober. When I give you methadone, or I give you Subutex or Suboxone, I'm giving you opiate replacement therapy. It's similar to the nicotine patch. I'm still giving you the drug. You're just not using the active drug, right? So you're not sober. It is how we get you off the streets. We get you to start functioning in life, but you are not sober. So my favorite is Vivitrol because, so what happens with addiction is, and I have a really unique way of looking at addiction, and it's something that just came to me over years of doing this. And in Michigan, you're required to have special certification in order to work with addiction. So what I discovered is that, and I really can't tell you how I discovered it. It's a mix of working with addiction and listening to spiritual teachers. So the human body has this normal homeostasis that it's always working on, right? Homeostasis is, am I okay? So what I'm going to tell you is I'm going to give you a little more insight into how addiction takes people over, okay? So your body has this homeostasis. Am I tired? Am I hot? Am I cold? Am I hungry? Is something hurting? And it's working on that 24/7. Never stops working on it, right? That's why in the middle of the night, you wake up and you have a blanket and you're like, how'd I get this? I don't know how I got this. Well, you got cold because your body is always working on this homeostasis, right? When you have an addiction, it adds the addiction to your homeostasis. And it says, well, I'm not hungry, I'm not tired, but I don't have that. And if I don't get that, I'm not okay. So their body literally adds that to their homeostasis, and they have to have it to be okay. And then what happens is, because it's an addictive substance, it will eventually take them over completely and they will say, I don't even need to eat. I just need that. And then I'm okay. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That clear it up?
Definitely. Yeah.
So it literally drives them. Everything becomes based off of, if I have that, then I'm okay. So nothing else matters until I get that, until I get my drug. Right?
Yeah. So what do you think is the, I mean, I know that there's not probably one answer, but what do you see that could possibly work out there to really help with this?
Well, one is finding the alternative means, like Vivitrol, and two is, see, addiction is a tricky thing because a lot of times when the addiction starts, we don't even realize the addiction has started. We are addicted after, like after the fact we go, oh, maybe I have an issue. No, I don't have an issue. I'm good. Right. But I think that, doctors, they can only treat the people if they're honest. Right? If you go to a doctor and say, I have an addiction, then he can address the addiction. But until then, they really can't. And then as far as the court system goes, I actually lost my brother because of the legal system. And that is an area that I think that counseling and all needs to be mandatory. And it is for the most part, and it is becoming more and more so. When you get like a DUI, it's an automatic, you must go to counseling. And I think that that's, that's a good thing. So the thing with addiction is we need more education. People don't understand addiction. They don't understand what's happening. And again, this isn't knowledge that I found somewhere. It's something that I just came to me. So what happens with addiction is the human body has about 50 trillion cells, right? So they're microscopic. You can't see them. I can put them under a microscope and then I can see them. That's how small they are. So then if you just look, like what I tell people is just take this section of your hand and tell me how many cells do you think are there? So you have skin cells and hair cells and tendon cells and bone cells and muscle cells and vein cells and how many cells? Just right here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The whole body. When you take a substance, including Tylenol, Ultrin, it affects all 50 trillion cells. It does not go to the toe cells and say, I don't want to go there. No, it's part of your body. So when you have a substance that you keep putting in, it affects all 50 trillion cells, okay? And then what happens is it alters the cells. It actually alters them to where the cells now think that they need it, it's dependent on it. So when you try to stop using, all 50 trillion cells freak out.
Yeah.
They're like, whoa, dude, what are you doing, right? That's withdrawal. That's craving. If you are able to get sober, okay, and you're starting to go through your life and you're trying to deal with life without this substance, because what substances do is immediately they start coping for you. You don't have to cope anymore. Okay. But the second you take a drink, the second you take a hit of that joint, you have woke up all 50 trillion cells. All of them. You don't just wake up one. You don't just wake up the cells in the lung. You have woke up all 50 trillion cells to addiction. And now your cells are like, hey, party's on. Let's go. Let's do it. Right? That's why it's so hard. So a lot of people have this idea of why don't you just quit? Why don't you just stop? It's not that easy. It just isn't that easy. And the reason why people, and I'm not condoning this, but I'm not saying that eventually people do burn bridges. They eventually burn these bridges and there is no return. But the reason why people steal from grandma is because the second that you take a drug, your frontal lobe is affected up here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Your frontal lobe, even coffee. You take a drink of coffee. I don't drink coffee, but if you drink coffee. Oh, I'm awake. Right? The frontal lobe's affected. So the second you take a drug, your frontal lobe is affected. You're not thinking with your right brain. You're thinking with the addict brain. Okay? Your frontal lobe controls your right, wrong, your reasoning, your morals, your values. It also does the concept of time, right? And, you know, other animals don't have this, like humans have this frontal lobe where we can understand, oh, it's, you know, you don't see a cat going, it's 7 o'clock, I think I should go to bed. They don't have that idea, right? So the second you take a drug, your frontal lobe is affected. You can no longer make the right decisions. Now, there are some addicts that do. I've had some very moral people that are addicts, but for the most part, that frontal lobe's affected, so you can no longer make those moral decisions, and you're not able to truly, you have to make the addict mind go past to get to the cause and effect. But most of them, they don't, because the drug comes first.
Yeah, and I definitely lived that. I mean, it was in our whole relationship. I didn't realize how much it was in our relationship until much later, when I started working from home, because I used to work 50 hours a week. So I didn't see, and it was opposite schedules most of the time. So it could be good for a day, you know, when I'm home, you know, but, you know, by the time I got home, he was out of it and he was asleep most of the time. So it was a very different thing. And then when I realized what was really happening, and then we started trying to get help and trying to do the things, you know, and then it just got worse and worse and worse. And finally, he was breaking things. He was getting stumbly drunk because he tried to stop doing the pills and the heroin so that he could, you know, and so he started drinking instead.
Yeah.
Substitute. And it, you know, really culminated into one day after everything, after we tried to rehab twice, we tried everything. And I finally said, look, I can't deal anymore. You have to please function. Like, I don't even care that you're using, you just have to function. Life, right? This is what I need from you. This is what I need. And that's it. And he stole the right money.
Yeah. Because the addiction comes first. That's that homeostasis where the body now thinks, and I'm not making excuses for their behaviors. That's what we have AA for and NA, to where they have to end up going back through those behaviors and making amends. But the reason they can do that is because that frontal lobe's affected, but also because that addiction has now literally taken over their body and they literally think they're going to die without it. And now they won't die with like alcohol withdrawal will kill them. That is very dangerous. Opiate withdrawal, they will think they're going to die, but they won't. And if they have an addictive personality and they haven't got the proper treatment, their addictions will change form. So it'll go from opiates to alcohol to video games to gambling. It'll just to working. It'll change form.
Yeah, definitely. And I've seen that. I've seen that in other friends. I've seen that in even in myself. You know, there's been times when I've known, I might need to go. I participated in Al-Anon for a long time. And I'm like, I might need to go to see a meeting because I feel myself having the addictive behaviors. Oh,
yeah.
I'm using, you know, this sex or whatever it was at that time to cope, and that's not right. I need a dopamine hit. Okay, why am I?
Exactly.
What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that in this society too, that the dopamine is a huge issue in this society. And I think that that's where the research lies, is I think we're addicted to those dopamine hits.
Yeah,
so.
I am one of those people that can't sit. If I'm actually working, I can't have Facebook open in a tab, because when it flashes, I have to look at it.
Oh, yeah.
So, and that's a dopamine hit.
Yep. So, yeah, and I think that our younger children, we're going to have major issues with the phones, and even my own younger two daughters, we're going to have major issues with this. There are natural ways to build dopamine, and especially, I'm not exactly sure about all the other states, but I know for Michigan for sure, with our extreme lockdowns, we've been really struggling. So there's natural ways to build dopamine, which is doing small accomplishments throughout the day. And you can, they can be as ridiculous as starting, like you got out of bed and you say, oh, I got out of bed. Awesome. Good job. Right. And it seems so ridiculous to reward yourself for getting out of the bed, but
how long ago was that now? 4 years ago? 3 years ago? 3 years ago, September, I had a nervous breakdown. And that was one of the things that I had to do. I literally had to go, oh, I'm out of bed. Wow, cool. Whoa, I started laundry. Oh, cool, good job.
Yeah,
you know, and literally had to start listing because I had nothing good to say about myself for a while. And it was like, oh, good, I'm out of bed. Oh, cool, I made dinner. And, you know, but I would find myself on the floor with coffee all over myself. You know, I was like falling out, just like, it was a combination of a whole bunch of stuff, including a stressful job, my mom's health, processing my breakup was a big part of that. And then my dog died. It was everything kind of hit at once. So, you know, being in that space, knowing that that was one of the things that really did help me, was really starting going, hey, I got out of bed today. Hey, I get a point.
Yeah.
That's cool. Okay, cool. I actually got on and I logged on. I actually did the correct social media. You know, I actually did active social media, not passive.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a whole, I think that that's very important that people hear, like, hey, you need to start rewarding yourself. It's not about the, it's not always about the big, huge goals. It's about the little goals in between.
Yeah. And it's difficult. I don't know why it's so dark in here where I'm at right now. It's Michigan, right? Where it's going to rain. Yeah. Uh-huh. And I find too that in my work, substance abuse especially, but, you know, the low self-esteem is an epidemic. It's a true epidemic. And not believing in ourselves and, you know, this pandemic certainly hasn't helped that, but that was part of my, my own mission, was learning that we all have this infinite worth. And I can tell you, like, when it comes to addiction, that is it's an issue across the board. I think it's actually a global issue, really. I really think it's a global issue. But especially in the addiction world, it's a huge issue of having low self-esteem, right? Because of the things that I've done, and not just the things that I've done in the past. The bigger problem is people care about what other people think about them. That's the key. Mm-hmm. And the minute that you stop caring about what other people think about you, then you become free. Yeah. Right?
I truly believe that.
Yeah. And that's a lot of what my teaching centers around, is teaching people, you know, we have to teach about the addiction, but then we move into, it always moves into self-esteem. It always moves into building their self-esteem, their self-belief, that they have innate value, that they have an innate worth. People don't realize that we have innate worth. We have innate value. And it doesn't seem to matter to me, like, which country I'm talking to people in. It's the same. It's the same issue. They don't know they have infinite worth. They just don't know it. They don't realize it. So.
Yeah. I think that it is so crazy, because, and I think that's because we've been taught that you're nothing special.
Yeah.
You know, even when you are special, you know, it's, you have to keep doing, you know, Dance Monkey.
Yes.
We were talking, and if you stop dancing, then you're no longer special.
Right.
I had a thing from when I was a kid, and it's one of the things that I've worked with Landmark Worldwide. And I don't know if you've heard of them, but a lot of the stuff that they go through is seeing where you create your identity is one of the things. And one of the identities I've created, and one of the big pillars of my identity, is that I'm smart. And I got that at 4 years old. And so I've had to always be smart, because that's what people noticed. I was smart. I could read at four. You know, simple. Mm. I was reading the Garfield book, and it was probably memorization more than it was reading, but I could actually recognize that words. So
right.
But you know, if I wasn't there, I was just a nobody. You know, I wasn't smart. I wasn't performing. Yeah. I wasn't, you know, I'm not athletic. I'm not, you know, I'm not the one that's gonna go fix the car. So I had to find the things that I was good at and how I got recognition. And I had a large family. So getting recognition in a large family also is a big, huge thing. So the self-worth, definitely, I had to really realize, okay, why do I do this? And when I moved into the RV, a big part of that was because I had to realize that I wasn't living my life. I was living a life of someone that the obedient child and the obedient, the person that's doing, living the life that they are expected to live, not
right.
Me. And what mm-hmm. I wanted to do was be free and look at places and be in beautiful spots. And I didn't necessarily need to make $1 million to do that. How do I do it otherwise?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we all have that process that we need to or go through or should go through. It is the problem across the board that I find. So for me, I always thought that, like, when I go back into my life and my childhood, I always thought that more of my issues were centered around my dad, things with my dad. But when I actually went back, I actually found the issues were with my mom, and in the fact that I never measured up for my mom. I never measured up for her. I was never good enough for her. And when I finally stopped caring, what happened was I was at her house one day, and it took me 17 years to get my master's degree. It took me eons because
that's,
I was
still
a
awesome
single mom. I was a single mom. I was raising three kids, and I keep trying to mess with these lights so it can brighten up. I was raising.
They won't see the video. It's all
no.
Good.
Oh, okay. So I was raising three kids. I was working, and I was going to school. Right. And so I could only go to school part time because I had to balance all this out. So my mom would constantly ask, like, what are you doing in school? Why is it taking so long? What are you doing? So I went one day, and I'm in college, and I'm like 28 years old. I've got my three girls, and I take her my report card from college, right? And I had two A's and a B is what I had. I had taken three courses. I had two A's and a B. And this was her response. Well, that's not an A.
Wow.
And at that moment, I just said, that's it. I'm done. If you are not impressed by this, you will never be impressed. And you know what? I don't care anymore. I don't care. I don't want your approval. It just, that moment, I just said, I'm it. That's it. I'm done. And I no longer cared about her approval. And then from that point on, what I did was, I had my own approval at that point now. I now had my own permission. I had my own approval. So then what I would do is from that point on, she would come into my house and she would tell me that I didn't know how to clean and I didn't know how to cook and I didn't. So then I would start messing with her. And I would be like, she'd come over and tell me I didn't know how to cook or something. And mind you, I was forced to get married at 15 years old. And he was kind of Southern. So I wasn't allowed to cook out of a box. Everything had to be from scratch. My mom decided I couldn't cook, right? What? So anyways, so she'd come over and she'll start saying that. And I would say, I'd go, Mom, my pans are over there. You know, I don't know how to cook. We're starving. You got to cook us something because you know, I don't know how. And I would just, I just didn't care at that point anymore. So that's what I mean by is the minute that you decide you don't need somebody else's approval and you stop seeking it, you're free. I was free from that moment forward.
Yeah, and you can hear that in your voice. Even as you're talking about it, it's like you started like smiling and you could tell how much joy that brings you to be able to say that.
Yeah, it was very freeing because I remember there was times like when I was about 9 or 10, I had given her a Mother's Day card and I went and visited her at her house and it was her weekend and I give her Mother's Day card and she tells me, well, it's nice, but there's a word spelled wrong. I'm 10 years old. What? So to be able to go from that to, you know what? I don't care. What it does is you no longer become the world's puppet.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I try to like teach everybody else is you don't have to be the world's puppet anymore. You don't have to do that. You get to make your own decisions on your worth. You get to decide what's good enough. Now, then that adds in the little catch of us being hard on ourselves, but, you know, yeah.
Then it's a whole nother, you know, conversation of, you know, you can't do good enough for yourself. And then I've definitely went through that whole cycle too.
Well, we pick up where our parents leave off is what happens. Where our parents, you know, are our caretakers, or if you were bullied in school, we pick up where those people leave off and we start beating ourselves up. We don't need them to do it anymore. We're doing it.
Oh, yeah. Because we believe that. We learn that we believe that we are not enough in whatever way that not enough shows up.
Yep. Right? Yeah.
So it's funny, since I've been out here, you know, I've had a lot of like masculinity issues, like literally like I'm not manly enough to be doing what I'm doing. And then I laugh at myself when I think about these things because, you know, I'm like, who's to say that I do just fine on my own. I'm not, you know, I'm not helpless most of the time, unless I'm really fixing a car, but that's because I'm helpless fixing a car. You know, that doesn't mean I know plenty of other guys that are just as helpless as I am. So, but my family are all mechanics. So, so me not knowing how to fix a car is like almost like, what, you don't understand this? I'm like, no.
But, yeah.
And I, so, so I've
that
had
definitely
to,
makes you the black sheep
Oh yeah. Yeah. All over the black sheep on my family. pick a level and we'll,
right.
You know, it right yeah. down to I'm leaving and my family is very stable for the most part. My sister has been with her husband since I graduated high school, got married with her husband when I the year I graduated high school, and I'm 43. So to give you an idea of how many years they've been together, my other sister has been with her husband for twelve years now, I think. Oh. Yeah, and then my brothers decide they're just not going to and get married and ever, and that's been their decision, and they've been stuck to that too. So very stable-ish family. My parents are technically still married, although they don't live together. It's like all this, like, and we have this like big huge conglomerated family that's kind of fun. But it's, we're at family dinners. Like, even my sister's first boyfriend has been to our family dinners. Like, just like,
wow.
We just collect people, right? So,
it
ends up being our Christmas, like the big holidays before COVID, was 50 to 60 people.
Oh, wow.
Our immediate family is 35. So, like, even we were doing every first Sunday in the month, and it was like that. And it was very crazy for a very long time.
You that's big. Now, I thought that, like, my mom passed, I say a few years ago, but it's actually, it was 6 years. We just had that anniversary. It's been 6 years. And when she left, she put me at the top of, I'm actually at the top of 25. So there's 25 of us. So you definitely, you still have us beat. Yeah. But
25. So kids, grandkids, all of it?
Kids. Yeah, so I have my five girls from 32, well, it's going to be 33 to 13 years old. And then I lost my, I only had one sibling. I lost him to suicide. And so I had to take on my niece for a little while. So she is added into my girls. So I usually say I have six girls. And then I have 12 grandkids. And then the four older girls, you know, they have husbands. So when you add us all up, there's 25 of us. Wow. And then, and I'm up at the top. That's it. It's me. Yeah. So,
I'm technically third in line. My brother, between me and my oldest sister has passed. And then there are four under me. So there's seven total.
Siblings.
And we're a blended family. So my mom and technically my stepfather, who raised me, he's my father. And then his first wife and her husband and are there and everything. And then there's like, each one has three to four kids.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends up being stupid with partners.
That's good though. That, you know, it can be a blended family. We can bring in people, you know, the first boyfriend and stuff. That's a good thing that, you know, you can do that. A lot of families aren't like that. You know, once you break up, that's it. They can't ever talk again. And, you know.
Right. You know, well, it's like, it's just funny how you're just there. At that point, you're just there. You're another person. So, you know, however you feel. My brother's ex-girlfriend is the mother of his two children. She's freaking crazy. Like, really, she's crazy. There's no other way to say that she's crazy other than she's crazy. I would love for her to get help and get confidence, but she's another person that never had her mom left her, and she had confidence issues. She should have never maybe should have got help before she was on her mother. She's left her children, you know, and this cycle has happened, right? So she shows up at family affairs every so often. And they've been separated now for 10 years.
Wow.
Every so often.
Yeah, that's a different kind of concept. And then the thing is you know, there's two, and I think I seen you do like tarot cards and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's two ways to look at things in life. And that's one of the things that I found is because I myself was searching for the answer to happiness. Like, what is the answer to happiness? How do I get rid of this this constant depression that I had? I was never really an anxious person, but it was the depression for me that runs in my family. So I was always seeking, how do I get rid of this? How do I fix this? What's the answer? Where's the key to life? What the heck am I doing here? Right? So you can look at it from the human perspective, and the human perspective, we do need counseling. We need family. We need all of these things. The spiritual perspective, like my mother gave me and my brother up to my dad when I was little. So my dad actually raised us. And my dad was a very angry person. And then I went straight from that. I went back to my mom for a little bit, for like 2 years. And then I had a period of my life where it was from age like 2 to 5, where my parents were in South Carolina. So that's why I say mom funny. I know I say that word funny. So then I went back to her. And then right after that, I was forced to get married at 15. So I was back into an abusive man's life. So I had this long history of, but what I know is that when I've looked back, looking for the answer to life is, I had to have that abusive dad to be who I am today, to understand people the way I understand them, to be able to connect the way I can connect. So if you look at it from the human perspective, you won't really be able to heal. But if you start looking at it from the spiritual perspective, that's where the true healing comes in. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I believe that too. I don't think that a lot of it isn't. It's never, the body's just here, right? We identify with the body, but the body is, we are so much more than that body. And when we start connecting with what is, what I believe is so, right? What I believe is true, that we are larger than this body that we have and that we're all connected. And when we start connecting there and living more from that space, I believe that the other things kind of naturally heal themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, but what would you like to leave people with today? I mean, you've said so many wonderful things. I'm like, do I want to even ask that? But what would you like people to know today?
Well, when we're looking at the human perspective versus the soul's perspective, and we're saying that those are, you know, when you start looking at it from the soul perspective, that you're more than this body, then that is where the true healing takes place. But if you can understand that you're more than this body, that you are a child of source, creator, God, whoever you want to call that, then you can understand that you have infinite worth. That is my true core message, is that I want everybody to learn, is that you have infinite worth.
I love it. I love it. So, April, tell people how to get in touch with you today.
The best way actually to get a hold of me is through Facebook. That's the platform that I'm on the most. I have all the other social handles, but the Facebook is the best way to get a hold of me.
Awesome, awesome. April, it has been an honor. Truly an honor just to talk to you today. It's
thank you.
if you're hearing this and it's going to sound different than the rest of, it's kind of a little different. And I think that it's really important that we had the conversation that we had. You know, I don't think that we talk enough about mental health in this country. And we definitely don't talk about substance abuse in a loving and kind way, in a real soulful way, as we did today. So thank you so much for that. I appreciate you. Guys, I will see you guys all soon. Stay tuned, and you are loved.
Hey, folks, just a moment before you guys go. I want to tell you a little bit about my hosting provider, Green Geeks. They're really cool. It's been designed for maximum use and no waste of resources mindset, so that every aspect of their hosting platform is built to be energy efficient as possible. In addition to this, for every amperage they pull from the grid, they match with 3 times that in the form of renewable energy via Bonneville Environmental Foundation. So your website can be hosted on a 300% green hosting platform. It's amazing. So you can feel good that you're helping make a difference by hosting on a platform that's eco-friendly. If this means anything to you guys, go ahead and check it out at thecreativenomadshow.com/greengeeks, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to The Creative Nomad Show. If you have any questions about this or any other episode, go to creativenomadshow.com. There's also a link at the bottom. If you are a radical and would like to be a guest, you can apply to be on the show there. Thanks again, and know that you are loved.